Hello and welcome to the Recovering from Religion podcast. Our mission here is to offer hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. What follows is the audio from selected videos posted on Recovering from Religion's YouTube channel. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. You are not alone.
So this week we have Casey Hodas talking about adjustment to parenthood. So she has been in the show before. I think this is the third time that she has been here. So she's already an expert. And she's a licensed therapist in Wake Forest, NC. Throughout her career, she has worked in a variety of settings, including hospice, employee assistance programs, and for the last 12 years, private practice. Her current passion is supporting women through the adjustment to motherhood. She has advanced training in loss and grief, and also postpartum depression and anxiety. And she is a proud member of the Secular Therapy Project and the Freedom from Religion Foundation. So, Casey, welcome once again. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Amaya. Happy to be here.
Now, you've been on RFRX. This will be your third time on RFRX. And the first time you spoke about grief, and I got to tell you, I get to see some of the YouTube stats, and that has been heavily commented on and really watched and liked a lot. So good on you. That, like, you gave us a topic and a discussion that we really needed. Thank you for that.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. Yeah, grief will come up in this discussion tonight as well, because parenthood involves a lot of grief, as your parents can attest. But yeah, I think grief as well as, you know, motherhood are just kind of loaded topics that a lot of people don't talk honestly about. So I'm glad to take on any kind of taboo subjects that people don't really like to dig into. So let's do it.
Well, why don't we kind of start off kind of, you know, I'm one of the hosts and Amaya's the other host. And we kind of can tell you where we're coming from. Like for me, my wife and I, we're not going to have any children. We kind of thought about having children, but just can't. And then we may adopt some in the future, but it's not very likely. That's kind of where I'm at right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in my side is I'm 24, so I'm obviously I don't want to have kids right now. But I definitely want to have kids in the future. And there is nothing that excites me and terrifies me equally the same as having kids, because like I can barely take care of myself, let alone take care of another like baby that needs like my full attention. I can't imagine all the sleep deprivation, the responsibility, making sure they don't die in all the different ways that a toddler can like hurt themselves. It must be so exhausting. So it's really exciting idea, but also just absolutely terrifying.
That's perfect, Amaya. You summed it up. It's both exciting and terrifying. And that's how it's supposed to be.
It's good to know that I have a clear idea before.
Right on. So, yeah, and Eric, you know, knowing that you made your decision to not have kids, you know, it's also really important that people know that that's okay too.
Yeah,
you know, I think there's a lot of stigma. You know, I think people, especially, well, I live in the South, so everybody assumes, one, you go to church, and second, you have kids. So, like, if you don't, you know, and I only have one child, so that's also suspicious for everybody around here. So it's like, it seems like no matter, you know, when you grow up, there's like, it always feels like there's something you're not doing right, you know?
Got it. Yeah. There was quite a stigma around our, we lived in Southwest Missouri, and we would often get asked, and more than just inquiry, but like almost trying to like a guilt trip, like, so when are you going to have kids yet? And I would get from my own parents, like, so when are we going to have grandkids? You know? Mm-hmm. And that was kind of, that didn't feel good.
Right. Yeah. And I know, we've had a lot of RFRX topics lately on boundaries. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight, because that's a huge part of parenting, is setting those boundaries around, you know, the way that you want to do things and the unsolicited advice that you often get from other people.
And one of the things that one of the topics that I hope we cover tonight too, that comes up so much in the support groups is how do I balance, my kids' time with my religious parents? What bound? How can I set these boundaries so that they don't get drug off to Sunday school or church? And, you know, so that is actually a big conversation that's had in the support groups around the world that we're having.
Yeah, it's, you know, I have my own stories about that. And it's very difficult. And there are certain people like my mother who, I hope she's not going to see this on YouTube, that you'll just step through every, you know, you draw a line, step over it, draw another one, step right over it. Yeah. It happens. And, you know, some people are shocked that really like a grandmother would just like kidnap your kid and take him to church. Yeah, she would. So yes. Yeah, so we'll talk about some ways to, prevent that, hopefully, and some ways to address that with family members.
So where would we start this conversation? What would be kind of the base?
Well, I'd like to start with just the adjustment to parenthood. You know, when you become a parent, it can feel extremely overwhelming and terrifying, like Amaya said, because there's so many decisions to make. And people, we tend to like to think in terms of like right or wrong, you know, this or that. And when it comes to parenting, it's really complicated and very gray. And there are, I like to always say that there are many, many ways to be a good parent, not just one. And this is not about right or wrong. You know, you get to do it your way. And as terrifying as it is, you know, everybody, look around. A lot of people are doing this. And so, it you know, it can be done. It is scary. But it can be done. And it doesn't always come naturally. You know, we hear that word a lot with parenting. It's like, oh, it's just natural. Breastfeeding's just natural. Oh, you'll get it. It's natural. And it doesn't come naturally to everybody. So it's important to know that if it doesn't feel like it's happening naturally for you, that's okay. It doesn't mean you're a bad parent.
I'm kind of envisioning it as becoming a parent and being a parent is almost like there is no one right way to do it. There's a lot of advice out there, and it also takes a lot of experimentation. Different kids are going to have to be treated completely differently too.
Yeah.
I see a lot of nodding heads in the video gallery.
Yeah. They all have their own personalities. And I think, you know, it's important to remember that, tonight's title is adjustment to parenthood, as if it's just this one and done kind of thing. And it's not. The minute you feel like you got something figured out, like you got the baby sleeping through the night, something else is around the corner that will require another adjustment. It is just one adjustment after another, because there's a developmental leap coming that's going to throw everything out the window. So that, you know, it's an ongoing process. And when I did the grief talk, a lot of this is similar, because actually adjusting to parenthood involves a lot of grief, you know?
Oh, because you're losing your old life.
Yeah.
You're a completely unknown. Okay.
Absolutely. Think about what you're giving up. You know, a lot of freedom, all of it, basically, all of your freedom, especially at first. It's not about you anymore. Every decision you make now has to involve thinking about this little person and this tiny human who needs you. So vacation, we don't even call our trips vacations anymore in my house. They're trips, not vacations, unless the kid stays with grandma. Then that's a vacation. Because there's no more sleeping in. There's no more, you know, like everything changes. So I think you have to be patient. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I'm sure that everybody's also telling you, not like parents, telling parents how they're meant to do things and judging the way they do things, even if they have just as little idea of what they're doing as the parent. So that must also be quite challenging.
Yeah. Everybody has an opinion. From the second people know you're pregnant until the end, because you know, everybody's been there and they want to tell you like what to do about morning sickness and what you should do about this and what doctor you should see and whether you should do attachment parenting and when you should sleep train and what you should make your own baby food or you should use cloth diapers. And I mean, the list goes on and on. I was going to kind of talk about that too. You know, when you're supporting the new parents in your life, try to calm down a little bit with the advice, because you know they'll get it in their own time, you know.
Yeah, and I also kind of imagine there's a lot of generational pressure too. Some of the people who are now grandparents are pressuring or giving advice to a lot of the their children, and they're always going to be doing it wrong. And, you know, the parents of our generation here, we're kind of, well, I'm not a parent, but they're kind of having experienced something brand new that no other parental generation has had to deal with or before. We've got the internet now. How do you properly raise kids with the internet? You know, I see older generations just telling the modern day parents that they're doing it wrong. Completely always too much time on the internet.
Right. And yes, and there's new evidence all the time about that. Like how much screen time is too much. And especially now, I mean, you know, we talk about the adjustment of parenthood. I think I need a class on the adjustment to parenthood in a pandemic. Because, you know, now, I mean, it's completely, you know, unprecedented. Everybody trying to not only be the parent, but work from home and be the teacher. And in my case right now, trying to be the summer camp counselor, along with everything else. But yeah, it's extremely stressful. And, you know, if anybody tells you that it's a breeze, then they've forgotten, which is, you know, mom brain is a thing.
Yeah.
Or they just, you know, they don't want to scare you to death.
So what are some of the things to watch out for as a new parent? Like we like say I just had a brand new baby yesterday. What are something to look for or to take care of or plan for?
I think, you know, communication is key, and I'm going to use the terms, mom and dad, but I do want to be inclusive in my talk. And of course, I know that families look like they come in all different shades and fashions. So while I may say mom and dad, I mean partners. So communication is really important. And I think planning and talking about how you want things to look can go a long way, as long as you keep in mind that, you know, your plan may not work out exactly as you hope. You know, it doesn't mean you shouldn't talk about it just because plans go out the window. At least having a foundation for what you'd like, how you would like for things to go, is important. Because when you bring a baby home, yeah, you know, everybody's like, oh, babies sleep all the time. They sleep a lot, but it's like they sleep for about 2 hours at a time, and then they need to eat, and then 2 hours, and then they need to eat. So yeah. So, you're not going to be sleeping very much, and the sleep deprivation alone is enough to drive a new parent batty. So, I like to advise, couples to be very patient with each other during this time, because sleep deprivation, is technically a form of torture. So
The kids really, are torturing you?
Yeah. I mean, not sleeping.
I suffer with insomnia. I've struggled with it from all my life. So, like, for example, yesterday I got 2 hours of sleep. And that's just to me, normal. So I'm really scared that when I have children, it's just going to be the next level. And it's just going to completely ruin my sense of reality. I'm just going to go completely crazy without having been able to sleep at all.
Yeah, it is. It makes you feel crazy. So it really, support is so important. And, you know, during the pandemic, it's really hard on new parents because, you can't have the help from maybe family members or friends who will come over and watch the baby while you sleep. I remember being a new mom and feeling like, okay, I could either, when the baby sleeps, I could either get something to eat myself, I could take a shower, or I could sleep. But I could not do all three of those things. It was, because it just wasn't long enough to do all of those things. So it's really just the weirdest time when you're just your basic needs aren't even being met. So really challenging, but if you do have support in your life, lean on those people. There's so much shame in asking for help. It takes a village. It really does.
Okay. So when you're talking about support, not necessarily just joining a Facebook group or going to a monthly meeting or something like that, but actually asking for people to help. And would that kind of be even as mundane as maybe food? Getting hey, can you prepare some meals for me or something?
Yeah, there's a lot of people will do these meal trains now. That friends and family members of the new parents will organize, people to bring by meals on a rotating schedule, which is great. I'm not sure how that would work right now with the pandemic. I guess that could still work, right? Somebody you trust to make a freezer meal or something and drop it off and with no contact. That's great because new parents don't have a lot of time to meal plan and purchase ingredients and come up with a recipe and all of that. So that's really helpful. Gift cards for local restaurants, gift cards for grocery delivery could be helpful. And ask, people, if you know of new parents and they're kind of not reaching out for help, ask what they need. And if they don't respond because, hello, they're caring for a newborn, send them some diapers. Send them a gift card to a local place that delivers food. Instacart. It's so easy now with delivery and things like that available in most places that, everybody needs to eat. So, and during the pandemic, you can't come over and care for the baby while mom rests or takes a shower, but you can, send them some food or a gift card.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Very practical things.
Yeah.
Sorry, Eric, go ahead.
No, I also kind of see a lot of new parents just getting exhausted and it almost seems like they overwork themselves, which, what are you going to do? It's a kid. You don't want them to die. But how important is self-care during this time?
So important. And self-care really looks like whatever it looks like. It can be a chance to read a book. I swear, Tina Fey's book, Bossy Pants, got me through the first month because I felt oh my gosh, she's famous and she had a hard time with breastfeeding too. Wow. So I remember I would give the baby to my husband and go and read for an hour. And that was my favorite time of day was just leaving everybody, my family in the other room and just having some time to read in the quiet. So it's important to find something like that. To have that's just for you. Because like I said, your whole life has changed. And, for moms, your body is not even your body anymore. And your time is not your time. And there's this little tiny caveman screaming at you. and you have to figure out, is he dirty? Is he like, does he need a diaper change? Nope. Does he just, oh, maybe he just has colic and he's just going to scream for hours. So you have to find something that's going to ground you and remind you that you're a human being too, and you matter. And so many women just, you know, don't want to reach out for help or don't want to ask for help. And we just have to, we can't be heroes. You know, we have to talk about what's bothering us and ask for support, and ask for support from your partner. You know, it, figure it out, figure out how to share in the, you know, divide up all of the tasks that need to be done. There's endless laundry, and there's bottles to clean, and there's breast pump stuff to clean, and there's diapers, and, you know, there's so many things that just, it just seems seemingly endless list of tasks to do. So decide, you know, if mom is breastfeeding, you know, dad can do some of the other stuff. You know, that's one thing that only mom can do. And after a while, when you introduce bottles, if you do that, like, I'm not going to get on a, like a how to breastfeed tangent here, but there are things that your partner can help you with. You know, it's not all one person's job to care for baby.
Mm-hmm. And what about, like, paid support, so like nannies and things like that? Because I know a lot of new parents hire nannies, but then they get such a negative response from like their communities, being like, what are you doing going with your partner to the cinema? Don't you have a child to take care of? How can parents confront that, those kind of situations, or how can they react in a healthy way?
Just do it. It's your family, you know, and if you can afford to, you know, hire a sitter or hire a nanny, or, you know, in the postpartum days right after bringing home baby, I encourage people to hire a postpartum doula if they can. And right now during the pandemic, doulas most likely cannot come with you into the into labor and delivery, but they could probably come and help you out at home after. So yeah, whether it's a nanny, whether it's, you know, a parent or somebody that, you know, somebody else you trust. Yeah, and hired help is probably better than the grandparents, actually, because you're paying them and you can tell them what to do, and it's their job, you know, whereas grandma will, you know, do her own thing. Not giving grandmas a hard time here, but I'm just saying, like, when you're paying somebody to do a job, you know, you can manage that a little more easily than maybe a family member or somebody close to you.
Now, you use the word doula, and I've only heard that a few times in my lifetime. What the heck's a doula?
So a doula is a trained support person who is there to support both partners during the labor and delivery. So there are certified doulas. So they learn all about childbirth. They're great just with coaching you and helping you like breathe through the delivery and get through all of that. And then there are also postpartum doulas, because they also are trained in like child care for newborns and swaddling and all of those kinds of things.
Oh, wow.
There are doulas who will come into your home after, and some will even stay. There's a whole range of services that they offer. And in certain parts of the country, they're more popular and more utilized than in others. So that would just depend on where you live. They're also, sometimes they can be a little religious. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe that's in my local area, but I remember when I was doing my own search for a doula, I kept, you know, I'm really like, I dig into somebody's website before I like, you know, I got to figure out what's really going on. And I'd see Bible verses on their websites and stuff like that. So, you know, like, you have to do your research and interview several before you choose. But that's something that you know, if anyone is not yet a parent but thinking of it, that's certainly something to look into. If that's something, sounds like, you know, you could use the extra support. It's a great person to have in your corner.
So it would kind of be like a doula and then a nanny. Like, the doula is only for the very first couple of days, maybe a couple of weeks.
Yes.
Okay. Because when I hear doula, I'm thinking of Paula Abdullah. it's not who.
All right. That's probably not what you want in the delivery room, Eric.
No. Maybe she could sing the baby to sleep, but that's
okay. Oh, maybe. Okay. All right. But sleep and communication in those early days, really, really important.
One of the things, too, that I'm kind of thinking of is in my generation and before, we were kind of taught to do things ourselves, don't ask for help. You can fix your own mental issues. You just wait out a cold, suck it up. You got a cut, rub dirt on it. But you're kind of talking like, don't do that. That's going to make things worse. That's going to, you need to ask for help. I kind of thinking that some of the parents might run the risk of being again judged or looked down upon by the older generations for asking for help.
Yeah. But we know that a lack of support puts you at risk for all kinds of things, including postpartum depression. Moms and dads both. We know that nobody needs to go through this stuff alone. Can you? Sure. Should you? Probably not. You know, there's help out there. Okay. I hope that when we do these kinds of talks and we're just having these conversations about all of these things that people are struggling with all alone, to just keep getting the word out that nobody has to struggle with any of this stuff by themselves. Like, look at us. We have a whole group here tonight. Nobody's alone.
That's a good point. Yeah.
How can new parents deal with like postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety and things like that? Because I don't know the exact number, but I know that there's a very high percentage of new parents who struggle with these issues. And there isn't seem to be that much like knowledge of how to face it, because a lot of these parents may never have had any mental health issues, may never have struggled with depression or anxiety or any other mental health issues. So they may be like, apart from sleep deprived, blah, 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 also struggling with mental health issues. So how can they deal with that better?
Yes, and certainly the sleep deprivation doesn't help. Perinatal mental health disorders I'll give you all of the different terms, not all of them. It goes by so many different terms depending on where you are. I know we have some international folks tuning in with us. So you may have heard it referred to as postnatal depression, perinatal depression, postpartum depression, anxiety, perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. There's a whole host of terms, but we think about 15 to 20% of moms experience depression and anxiety during the postpartum period. And
15,
about
15 to 20.
Yes. It's probably actually higher because of the stigma so many women are suffering and they don't ask for help, because we just don't have a lot of, people educating new moms on this, and, they can fall through the cracks very easily, especially, women of color. Their rates of postpartum mental health disorders are likely 2 to 6 times higher than that.
Oh.
And I would say probably higher, because they are often, their concerns are often dismissed by the medical community. And now this one's staggering, this statistic, up to 50% of mothers living in poverty will suffer from a maternal mental health concern.
50?
It is the 50% of women in poverty. Isn't that, it's terrible. And it is the number one complication of childbirth, perinatal mental health.
So
we need to be talking about this. And, you know, OBGYNs need to be talking about this with their patients. It's often pediatricians who will see the first signs. And they will often do a screening of women when they bring in the baby for their first few checkups. Pediatricians are great at looking and seeing those signs that something's not quite right.
And if you don't have a good access to a good, I can't pronounce that word, sorry, but the doctor who you just mentioned, the kind of doctor you just mentioned who takes care of you when you just had a child, how can you identify symptoms that you may be struggling with postpartum depression or anxiety if you don't have those resources to tell you that you are actually struggling with these issues?
Yeah. Okay. So it is very, very common when you first have a baby to experience, you know, high and low, you know, mood swings, mm-hmm. and to be very weepy and emotional and worried and that kind of thing. That is something we typically refer to as the baby blues, and it resolves itself within a couple of weeks. So that is completely natural. Beyond that, go ahead.
That is a part of postpartum depression, or
no. That is kind of just that's how it is for most women.
Okay.
Yeah, about like probably like 80% of women experience that. So just kind of crying at the drop of a hat, feeling
totally normal then. Okay, got it.
Totally normal. Yeah. After about 2 weeks, though, that tends to just naturally kind of resolve itself as mom starts to figure things out a little bit and gets more comfortable with and settled in with baby. After that, postpartum anxiety symptoms can be, I mean, there's a ton of different ways that it can show up. It can be constant worrying, crying a lot, not being able to sleep when given the opportunity to sleep. I always have to add that because nobody's sleeping in a house with a newborn anyway. But when you have the opportunity to get a couple of hours or to have a nap and you can't sleep, that is a sign. If all you want to do is sleep, that can also be a sign. Lack of interest in baby. And it's all of these things together, because I also want to say that not every mother feels completely in love with her newborn right away. It does not mean you are a bad mom if you don't feel connected to that baby. You know, not everybody is a baby person. There are some people growing up playing with their baby dolls. They cannot wait. They knew they wanted to be a mother. Others of us have the baby and we're like, what am I supposed to do with this little screaming alien? But combined with all the other factors, feelings of hopelessness, crying, sadness, a loss of joy in things that you used to enjoy, dark and intrusive thoughts. And let me also say something about this one. So this is actually very common to have dark thoughts that may involve something bad happening to the baby, or something bad happening to you, or even seeing you doing something bad to the baby. This is called ruminating and intrusive thoughts. Thoughts are not intent. Okay. So it doesn't mean you want to hurt your baby, and it doesn't mean you're going to hurt your baby. Moms do not want to hurt their babies, but this is something to look out for. The media has often sensationalized postpartum depression and kind of lumped it in with postpartum psychosis, which is something very different.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That would be that would be scary. Yeah.
Yeah. And that leads to women not wanting to reach out for help because they've heard these stories. Everybody knows, I'm sure everybody's heard of Andrea Yates from back in the day. And there were others that, you know, we could point to that got news coverage, but that is a very rare kind of situation. And that isn't, that's certainly urgent if a mother is threatening to hurt herself or hurt the baby. That is something you want to get help with right away. But, but feeling all of these other symptoms that we've talked about and feeling this intense sadness, that is also a concern that you need to get help for. But women should not feel afraid that they're going to lose their baby, that the doc, that someone's going to take their baby away because they're having a hard time. And I think that's really like one of the reasons why women don't reach out for help or don't talk to their doctors.
Mm. So there's a 1 in 5, probably even more chance of having some sort of postpartum depression or anxiety. What's the comparison with postpartum psychosis, you know, this, what's that like?
It's around like 0.1 to 0.2%.
One-tenth or two-tenths of a percent? Oh, wow.
So very, very rare. Certainly an emergent kind of situation though, if it does, you know, arise. But that is, you know, that's, it involves, sometimes visual and auditory hallucinations. Delusions. And, a lot of times religious kinds of themes in hearing things and hearing voices telling you to do certain things or, and there is a risk of danger certainly associated with postpartum psychosis, but again, it's very rare. Mm-hmm. And that usually, you know, and the treatment for that involves medication, usually in treatment, inpatient treatment, and ongoing therapy.
And can sleep deprivation also cause like hallucinations? Because I can imagine like people may mix them if that's something that's common.
Oh, that's a good question. No, I would say that the types of hallucinations that are going on for postpartum psychosis, certainly sleep deprivation can exacerbate this problem for sure. But just your typical sleep deprivation that a woman is going through taking care of a newborn is not going to bring on, you know, a psychotic break.
Now, can dad, like fathers or say the partner who isn't actually giving birth to the baby, can they experience something similar, or is that just a myth?
No, absolutely. About 1 in 10 dads can experience postpartum symptoms, postpartum depression and or anxiety. A lot of times it's hard to really like know exactly what it is. It's typically a mix of anxiety and depression going on. But yes, dads can experience this. Parents who adopt a baby can also experience this.
Well, you're kidding me. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So we don't know a lot about why, you know, with mothers who give birth, we know that hormones probably have something to do with it. But there's just a combination of factors, and we just don't know a lot about the reasons why. And there's research going on all the time. However, the important thing is that if you are feeling this, any of these symptoms, and even if you feel like, well, I don't have all the symptoms, so like I'll get through this. There's no reason to get through this alone, even if you're just having the typical awful adjustment to being a mom, you can still get some counseling for that. You don't have to be diagnosable to reach out for help or to join a support group with other moms. It's really important that you don't feel alone.
And how long do these symptoms last or the disorders last? So, because I can imagine it should end at some point before it's considered like a generalized depression.
Oh, that's a good question. So, we typically diagnose perinatal mood and anxiety disorders within that perinatal time period. So that includes pregnancy plus the whole entire first year after childbirth. So I'm glad you brought that up, Amaya, because that is also another, you know, kind of myth, I think, that women think, well, I'm not postpartum because I had the baby 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm feeling like this now, so that can't be postpartum depression. This must be something else. Or I'm just, you know, no, it is. It could be. I mean, that's why I think perinatal is a better term. But a lot of times people confuse that with prenatal, but it's perinatal. So that peri around. So it's around the birth. So pregnancy, and a lot of women experience anxiety during pregnancy.
So it's almost like this like 2 year window, it seems like. Okay. And honestly, the kind of the symptoms that you're describing, not all, but many of them have very similar to what we talked about in your grief talk. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And it all kind of overlaps, yeah. I think, with grieving and with just, you know, when anything that significantly changes your life, you know, it takes some time to cope with it and to settle in into things. And your whole life is changing. So it's okay for it to take some time.
Well, is there anything you want to talk about, some setting some boundaries now, or got anything else to talk about that?
Yeah. You know, a few weeks ago, we did the Ask a Therapist talk, and there was a question that that we did not get to, which involved setting boundaries with religious family members. So, Amaya, is it okay if I read the question?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay. While I am and have been recovering from religion for the past 20 years, my mother has gotten more and more zealous. I'm about to have a baby in a month, single mother by choice. My birth plan has now gone to shit because of coronavirus. And now the rules are one support person can be there, but they can't leave. So I'm going to kind of like edit this down a little bit. I'm so worried she's talking about her mother is going to ruin this for me by saying her usual, it's your job to get your daughter into heaven. And where did I go wrong with you stuff? She's going to bring the baby a basket of religious gifts. I don't know how to react to all of this. When she gives me crosses and framed religious poems, do I just say thank you and move on? When she tells me how everything worked out because she's been praying for me, do I just let it go? I just wish she would lay off for a few days. Any advice would be appreciated. And I imagine that there's a lot of people here who can relate to that. The beauty of the COVID restrictions are that if you only have one support person, you know, you choose that support person, and it's kind of a built-in boundary in a way. So you can say to the people who assumed they were going to be there with you that, you know, sorry, the hospital has rules and you can't come. So that's, you know, that's helpful. You can always have a birth plan, which is just, you know, you can Google birth plan and you can come up with some forms that you can, that have the basic questions, which include who you want to be with you in the hospital, okay. Who's allowed, how many visitors, that kind of thing. Right now, you know, the rules are very tight and restricted for how many people can come in. But I think one of the bigger problems happens when you bring the baby home and people start sending gifts and especially religious people might start asking you, well, when is the christening? And, you know, and I don't know how christenings are working with the pandemic, but
it's a spray bottle, right?
Right, I guess. Who knows? Maybe it's a drive-through, like spray, like a drive-through car wash, maybe.
You should get one of those super soakers, you know.
Right. But I always encourage women, you know, to first like to think about what you want. This is about you and your baby and your family and the way you want that to look and your values. So, you know, I think writing things down can really be helpful, you know, writing down exactly what you'd like to say to people. And, you know, what are the answers to that question? When are you having the baby christened? I'm not. You know, that's the answer. I'm not planning on doing that. And you don't owe anybody an explanation for why. So I think it's a good thing to just kind of have that list of answers to those anticipated questions. And instead of saying, oh, no, thank you to the gifts, although you can certainly say no, thank you to any gift. I think preemptively, if you can provide a list of things you do need.
Oh, almost like a registry for like a wedding.
A registry, yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
plenty. Gosh,
yeah.
That's so brilliant.
Yeah, people register all the time for this stuff. And you can have, you know, you can send out an email because sometimes you register for a bunch of stuff like you really don't need. I mean, like the baby industry is like worse than the wedding industry, I think. Like with the, like you need this and you need this new Diaper Genie 2000 or whatever. Like, no, you don't. Like wipes warmer. Like, come on. Do you really think your baby cares about a cold wipe on his butt? Like, not care about that.
But, yeah. I can tell you that I had these traumatic experiences when I was 2 months old. The wet wipe, it was so cold.
Eric, Save it for your therapist.
Okay. All right.
Right. So I think like, and sending out, you know, when you come home with the baby and then you might be thinking like, oh my gosh, I should have registered for more diapers. We don't have enough diapers. So, you know, you could even send out an email to everyone, you know, baby's home. We're settling in nicely. If you haven't, you know, if you were thinking about like sending a gift, like here's some things we really could use right now, and have that list sent out. Boom.
Is that something you never have enough of, is diapers? You just never have enough of? Is it like,
yes.
Okay.
Never. All never. Right. I used to have that statistic too about how many diapers per day you typically go through, but that's long gone from my mom brain. Yeah. You never have enough wipes or diapers. So
I really like that tip to kind of prepare in advance, write things down, write what you're going to say, kind of to get a plan together. That's really, really great idea. I mean, it applies really well to so many aspects of life, but there's these times where you just don't think about doing that type of great technique in other situations.
Mm-hmm. That prevention is always the best one, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, and people are going to give you presents that you don't want. People are going to assume that you're religious and give your babies a little tiny Bible. So, you know what, like take what you could use and, you know, dump the rest or donate it or something.
To use the Bible pages as wipes?
Eric, I think you just invented something. Something. You run with that.
Okay. I'll All right.
another thing that new parents often deal with is people just ringing the doorbell, you know, like even if it's just, it could be something you're expecting, like your big shipment of diapers. When I had my son, when he was a baby, we had a dog who like the doorbell just really was his, like it would just set him off. Like he was the best dog ever, but the doorbell was just like that thing, he was going to bark. And so we actually put a sign on the door outside. Please do not ring doorbell. No religious canvassing. No thank you. Like, you know, we put a bunch of like, just do not knock. Do not ring the bell. If, you know, text us. If you need us, text us. Because that's another boundary that we have to set.
And what about saying no to specific people? And I know this sounds a bit mean, but let's say you have like a family member who is very religious and is very insistent on trying to help you and you really don't want their help. And you much rather have like your best friend with you in the birth room, or you know, in other areas. How can you deal with that? How can you tell, you know, your mom or your brother or whatever, I don't want you to be here. I'd rather have this other person.
Well, you can say just what you just said.
Okay,
that's a very assertive way to say it. I'm choosing to have this person. Period. Right. You don't owe an explanation. You don't owe an apology. Mm-hmm. You could even have sometimes you have a really good girlfriend who can do that kind of thing for you. Those are the best gatekeeper friends who can be the person to say, oh no, they're not having visitors right now. But I will be happy to take that lasagna and put it in the freezer and, see you later. Or
okay.
And like what Amaya is talking about, like choosing who comes with you into the birthing for labor and delivery. I think you could also have the nurses. I mean, the nurses at the hospital are trained, and believe me, like they will tell, they are not about playing any games with any eager grandparents to get in the room. They will tell you, sorry, no, you must wait outside. Here's the waiting room. Go get a cup of coffee. So they're also your allies in this. So rely on your healthcare professionals too, as well as friends and anybody else you trust.
Got it.
But I hope that I addressed that question that we got. I felt so bad that we didn't get to it a few weeks ago.
No, I think you did. And I think it was great that she asked this, because I'm sure there's so many people who are struggling with different version of the same story, like having people they don't want around them wanting to be around the parents and not knowing how to say no. Because it is very hard to say no to someone that you love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and right now, you know, there are grandparents who aren't able to visit with their brand new grandchildren, and it is heartbreaking. And you know, we're all experiencing those kinds of things right now, not being able to connect with the people that we really want to. So we just all, you know, have to be patient. And with new parents, you know, have some patience for these folks. Like they are going through the biggest adjustment of their lives. So, you know, I think we have to back off a little bit and hold on to that advice that we might be really eager to give, and just, you know, wait it out.
Mm-hmm. And in the context of COVID, how can we deal with the COVID restrictions and parenting at the same time?
You mean for
asking for support, for example. So okay. Being able to maybe access any support at all, for example, like that, I can see how that could be a thing for many parents.
I have some resources that I have links to. There's a great resource called Postpartum Support International, mm-hmm. and they are doing a ton of virtual support groups right now for free. And if you go to postpartum.net, you can find out more. They are a wealth of information on that website. If you need somebody to talk to, they have a warm line, which means, you know, it's different from a hotline because it's not a live person answering ready to talk to you. But if you call, someone will get right back to you. So someone mm-hmm. is manning the phones and listening to the messages.
That's really
and
cool.
And you can text as well. And they have support in different languages and support for dads. There's a weekly dad support group. They're wonderful. And there's a directory of therapists and also psychiatrists who are trained in treating perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. There's information for the media. Their mission is to get out the word about, evidence-based treatment and support for new moms, new parents. So that's a good one. In your local area, there are tons of mommy groups that are holding their meetings online right now. Even Facebook, you know, if that's all you can get, like sometimes, everybody's here from different places, so I can't speak to your local area and what's available. For some women, it comes down to like a Facebook group. And you know what? If that's all you can get, then fine. Like, you know, there are some really good supportive Facebook groups, but proceed with caution because you will, like, if you want to, you know, get support from other moms in Facebook groups, great. Do not rely on those though for help for like medical issues or, you know, mental health issues. You're going to hear all kinds of stuff in those Facebook groups. So, you know, don't seek advice about caring for your baby or yourself through those groups, but certainly for support, you know, like that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What some things to watch out for in terms of pseudoscience? Because you mentioned a bit like not trust everything you hear. So I can imagine things like, I don't know, essential oils or anti-vax groups.
I don't know what it is, but the quacks really prey on new parents big time.
Well, they seem to do it with any kind of vulnerable population. Folks
yes.
who have cancer, folks who have any kind of illness, or even during this COVID, we have seen scams and folks trying to prey upon those fears. And you're telling me that having a child is no different than that. Like, there's a lot of predatory folks out there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unfortunate. Yeah. It's like, yeah, they attack whenever they sense some like vulnerability, like you said, or anxiety or fear, they're going to jump right on it. Ask your pediatrician, find a good pediatrician in your town and ask them. They are ready. They have heard it all. Don't worry. Like, you know, I don't know. I remember checking my son's temperature and then being like, well, it's only, I mean, it's 100. I don't know. Like, is that a bad enough fever? Like, just call them. It doesn't matter. The worst that can happen if you call the pediatrician is they say, no, I think you're fine. Right? That's the worst that could happen. Or bring them on in. Usually they say, bring them on in. Bring them in. Let's take a look.
Do they tend to practice an abundance of caution, the pediatricians, or is it just kind of vary from doctor to doctor?
Probably varies from doctor to doctor, yeah. But in my experience, they are very patient with new moms because they know you're scared out of your wits. So they are such a great resource, and not only for your baby, but like I said, they do screenings for postpartum depression. A lot of pediatricians' offices have a lactation consultant or a lactation nurse on staff right there who can be helpful for any breastfeeding issues. So whatever it is, you know, ask the pediatrician, because if it's not a medical thing, they can probably connect you to somebody who can help you, such as a therapist for, you know, for depression or something like that. Or moms groups, like they know about the moms groups in town. They know who's meeting virtually, I guarantee you. So listen to your doctor about the vaccinations. Vaccinations save lives. I'm not a doctor. I'm not here to give medical advice, but don't get me started on that. Follow those guidelines and get the vaccinations. Like, read the science. Babies do not need chiropractic care. That's another one. Ooh, infant chiropractors.
There has been babies that have been killed because of chiropractic, chiropractic.
All I'm saying is babies don't need chiropractors. Talk to your pediatrician. Babies make all kinds of weird sounds. They grunt in their sleep. They spit up. They poop. They have diarrhea. They have all kinds of things, excretions from all of the places. So if you are concerned, talk to your pediatrician. Your pediatrician, if it's a good pediatrician, a trusted pediatrician, they will not refer you to a chiropractor for your baby's acid reflux. They'll prescribe some Zantac maybe, but that's about it. Like, babies are learning, their little body is learning how to digest their, you know, breast milk or their formula, and they are pooping it out, and they're just learning all that stuff, and they're learning how to sleep. And so there's a lot going on there. So if you're concerned, ask your doctor. Your pediatrician and your OBGYN are the people that you should be consulting for any of this stuff, any questions that you have.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Perfect. Essential oils smell great. You know, they smell good. They are not going to prevent your baby from getting sick. It just doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I know you touched on this a little bit before, but just as a quick summary, what are the things that people who want to help new parents can do? And what are the things that you should say and not say, most importantly? What are the things that you should definitely avoid?
If you're wondering, like, how do I support the new family down the street? Like, I just want to do something for them. I want to come over and hold the baby. Well, you know, they may not need you to come over and hold the baby, but I guarantee you they would not turn down a freezer meal or a gift card for a restaurant or a gift card for Instacart. Or if you just went and picked up some groceries and left them on their doorstep, they would be grateful. So think about the basic needs. If you hire, and I right now in the pandemic, this probably doesn't apply, but, you know, hire somebody to, like, or you go over and clean their bathroom. Or fold some laundry, or they might need you to hold the baby, and so mom could go take a nap or take a shower. They might need you to clean up their kitchen or put on a pot of coffee. You know, there are so many basic practical things that new parents are just so overwhelmed that they can't do for themselves. So think about those kinds of things. Those are really helpful, a lot more helpful than, you know, like, I don't know, a gift basket of, you know, wet wipes. Well, no, wet wipes would be handy, but I don't know.
Sausages.
Sausages. Or a infant Bible.
We've got some ideas in the pub or in the chat about taking dad to the pub, or buying mom a present as opposed to the baby, or even helping to mow the lawn or shovel the driveway too. Mm.
Yes, that's a great one. Mowing the lawn. I mean, think about that. Yes. And like Eric said, wipes and diapers, you never have enough. Amaya asked what not to say. Don't tell them, oh, just cherish this time. It goes by so fast. Not fast enough, in my experience. And, oh, they're only little ones. Just love on them. Well, you know what? Mom might be really tired and her boobs might be really sore from breastfeeding. So, you know, that's not going to work out. Don't hold the advice, because unless they ask for you, maybe they ask, what did you do about sleep training? When did you start sleep training your baby? If they ask you, then fine. The door is open now for you to give some advice or tell them about your experience and share a little bit. But if they don't ask, like, don't just start offering what you did with your kid. I had people telling me my baby was 2 weeks old. Oh, I had my kids on a schedule by then. I was like, how did you have a schedule with a 2 week old? That was not true. People forget and they will lie to you.
Is there a difference between offering advice and if you kind of maybe noticing a new parent having some symptoms of postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety, kind of bringing that up? Was there kind of a difference between those two things?
That's a really, that's a great question, Eric. Yeah, and now that we've covered some of the symptoms, you know, you see, if you're really familiar with mom or dad and you feel like they just aren't acting like themselves, it is okay to ask, how are you doing? And they're probably going to say, oh, fine, it's fine. Mm. And then you press a little bit more and say, no, really, how are you doing? Are you getting any sleep? When did you eat? Did you eat today? And, you know, ask some very pointed questions that, you know, you're not telling them what to do. You're asking them how they're doing. That's a really big difference between offering unsolicited advice or telling them about what you did when you were a mom and asking, how is this going for you? That's very different. And that comes from a place of concern.
Got it. Yeah. Thank you for making that distinction.
Yeah.
Well, do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Really. It really, you know, everybody's parenting journey is different. And try not to compare yourself to other new parents. You know,
oh, like, yes.
It is not worst. A competition. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And that applies to so many other things than just parenting too. Because I know for myself, I'm comparing myself to other people. I'm like, why am I not there yet? And that makes total sense to apply that also to parenting.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, whatever it is, you know, if breastfeeding didn't work out for you and you decided to go to, you know, and use formula, you know what? Thank you, science. Formula. Formulas also saves lives. There are babies who are alive today who would not have been back, you know, in the day because there is formula, and it is fine. Fed is best, period. So if you know, if it didn't work out for you, doesn't mean anything. Just means it didn't work out. Like I said, there are many, many ways to be a good mom, many ways to be a good parent. So try not to, you know, to get into that game. And if you're seeing somebody doing something that you wouldn't necessarily do with your kid, you know, think this is, I got this from Amy Poehler. Good for you. Not for me.
Oh, that's cool. I wasn't expecting the second half of that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Casey, thank you so much for joining us today.
And
you've put together some great resources. I'm going to go ahead and pop those into the chat now. And then we've got several questions that were asked during the chat. Amaya, you want to start the Q&A session?
Sure. So the first question is not really a question, but I'm going to assume it means, what is Secular Doula Project? Because I'm just reading Secular Doula Project, so I'm assuming there is some sort of...
That would be, instead of the Secular Therapy Project, we can work on...
Oh my gosh, that's great. I know one secular doula here in my area in Raleigh-Durham. But she's the only one that I actually know is like truly like, you know...
Well, I just read that Gail texted that it was a joke, so...
No, I like it.
In front of all the internet.
Gail's going to get right on that.
Love that. Okay, so now I'm going to ask an actual question. So someone says, I run a support group in Colorado Springs, very Christian and conservative city. Any advice for my group members that have babies, little ones, or little ones who have families that are expecting religious rites of passage, such as baptism or dedications?
Yeah, we kind of talked a little bit about that, I think. But, you know, it's your decision. It's nobody else's. And I know that a lot of times these rituals are also cultural and maybe maybe social kinds of rites of passage too, like that you may no longer believe, but you still maybe participate in some rituals. And, you know, I think it's up to every parent. And so, you know, talk with your partner about what you want to do about that. You are a team. It's really important for partners, you know, your family, to be a team and to decide what you're going to do, and address the religious family members who may not be happy about it. You know, address them together, you know, be a united front when it comes to that stuff. That's really the only advice I have. You're going to be an advocate for your child for the rest of your life. So there are going to be a lot of times you're going to have a lot of uncomfortable conversations that just comes along with being a parent. And, so, you know, start practicing now by saying no to those grandparents, or saying like, we're not doing that. We're not raising our child in a religious manner. Period. You know, it's your decision.
Got it. We have another question here, and, this person is kind of experiencing that his spouse won't take advice because, being the mother, she feels like she knows exactly what's right, and so she kind of will tell him that your idea isn't valid because I'm the mother, I gave birth to the child, and what I feel and what I know is the correct thing to do.
Okay. That's a tough one.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in that that question there.
Yeah.
That sounds a little, I mean, I'm correct me if I'm wrong, but that sounds a little more needing for marriage counseling and less for parental advice almost.
Yeah. I don't know what kinds of decisions, you know, he's talking about, if it's medical stuff with the baby or like vaccinations or things like that. So if it is something to do with the baby's like healthcare, you know, he could always say, well, hey, why don't we, you certainly have a valid point there, honey. But let's talk to the pediatrician and just see what they say, you know, if it's a kind of a medical thing. Or a lot of things, actually. The pediatricians are great resources for a lot of different kinds of parenting issues. So you could always just say like, well, I just think I'll call the pediatrician just to be sure, just to see what they say. Not, you know, because you're not saying that she's completely wrong. Mm. You're just saying like that, oh, well, there's a lot of different, opinions on this matter. So maybe we should just do some research.
Mm-hmm. And linked to that question, how can parents align on different parenting styles when they have different ideas of how to raise your kids? Because if there's two of you and one child, then, you know, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, you have to talk about it, and you have to be able to defend your, you know, opinion on it. You know, as far as like sleeping arrangements, like that's a huge topic, whether you co-sleep or not. You know, there are people who decide that the baby sleeps in have a family bed, and so the baby actually sleeps in the bed with them. Then there are co-sleepers that attach, it's like a bassinet that attaches to the bed. Then there are people who are like, nope, that baby is going in the crib day one. So it's all across the board, like what people decide to do. And a lot of times the mother and the father like disagree on what should happen. So I think you have to be willing to talk it out and talk about your reasons for wanting to do it a certain way. You know, and maybe even get the help of a therapist if you're at an impasse and you really can't come to any kind of agreement. Yeah, you can get some marriage counseling about it. And if you feel like it's something that's unsafe for the baby, such as like a sleeping arrangement kind of deal, again, I sound like a broken record, but talk to a pediatrician about it. But yeah, I mean, just continuing to talk about it instead of just shooting it down, you know, outright, like that's a stupid idea. Like just hear the other person out. And chances are the more you talk about it, you know, a lot of times you figure out that you actually do have the same goal. You probably both want your baby to be healthy and happy, and you want to be healthy and happy. So how can you somehow like meet in the middle on these things?
Kind of tying into our very beginning discussion about the stigma of not having kids. This question, this person asked about having vasectomies in early on and, you know, knowing that they're not going to have kids. That's actually something that I considered too when I was young. But I was talked out of it because they were saying I may eventually regret it. This questioner wasn't talked out of it. But how do you kind of, which is fine, but how do you kind of deal with that stigma that folks put on you about wanting to do that and definitely not wanting to have kids?
Yeah, that's another thing I should have added to like things not to say is that, oh, you'll change your mind. Eric, I'm sure you heard that, right?
I heard it.
Oh, you say that now. If you're going to want a little baby, like some people don't want to have a baby and it's okay. And you know, just because you don't have a child, like just because you had your vasectomy and you decided no kids doesn't mean that you aren't nurturing something or somebody. Maybe you have a pet. Maybe you have a career that you love.
That's a good point,
maybe
yeah.
You're a volunteer for an organization and you put a lot of time into that. You know, so everyone is parenting, right? Like we're all nurturing something. A garden. Like, I mean, you know, like there are so many interests and hobbies and fascinating things about the world we live in that you put your time into. So don't let anybody put the pressure on you to have a kid as if that's the only way you can be complete. It's not.
And you can have kids down the road by adopting them too.
Yeah.
What would be a response to someone who would say, what would be kind of a response? Or you just walk away feeling like I'm okay with myself with this decision? Because that's not easy to do.
Like a response for somebody who says like, you're definitely going to want to have kids one day?
Yeah. Yeah.
You could always say, I guess that'll be my problem and I'll figure it out.
Got it.
Really nobody's business.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right.
I know. I got very assertive once I had a kid. Like, I don't have any more fucks to give. Like, I will tell you, no, that is none of your business.
You know? This many. Zero.
You got to stand up for yourself and stand up for your kid if you have one. And if you decide not to have kids, stand up for yourself.
Okay.
And the last question that we have is how to deal with feelings of not liking your kid or your children. Because some parents may love their kids, but not like them. So how can they deal with the feelings of shame and of guilt?
It is normal. I feel this way every day. Not every day. Most days I have a second or two where I don't like my kid. My husband and I are constantly calling our kid a douchebag, not to his face, but kids are, come on, Gail, right? Gail has four, right? They are little. And if you read one of the books I listed was called The Happiest Baby on the Block. He also has a book called The Happiest Toddler on the Block. Now toddlers are huge assholes. Like they just are. They're little cave people. Like you think about a cave person, you know, like or grunting and like this, that, I want that. No, you know, I want my way. I want that donut. No, I hate that donut. Like they are constantly like just making your life miserable. So, so it's okay to not like your kid. It doesn't mean you don't love your kid. You love your kid, right? Good moms have scary thoughts. That's another book on my list. just because, you know, good moms don't always love motherhood either, you know?
Okay.
When, when I started figuring out, like, oh my gosh, I will never have another uninterrupted second in my life. Are you kidding? I was like, I don't know about this. Too late. Like, I love my kid. And, you know, you just got to figure out how to, you know, how to get your needs met. And, you know, if you don't like your kid, that's fine. I promise. You love them just the same. They have their own personalities. They will probably grow up to be somebody that you like because you're the parent. So if they grow up and then you don't like them, then it's your fault.
Are you serious?
No, I'm kidding.
Right.
People are people.
And kind of along the same lines, what about favorite kids? Like, are there favorites? I mean, is, because I think I'm a favorite, to be honest with you, but.
You are, Eric. So you're the pet child?
Maybe.
I don't know. I only have one.
Okay.
I do have a sibling. And she's definitely the favorite. She's the baby. And she didn't run away from home like I did. But I don't know. I guess you'd have to talk to somebody who actually has more than one kid. Like, because I don't have any personal experience having a favorite, but I hear it happens. And I don't even know. Like, I think that I think a lot of parents have one of their children that they feel maybe super connected to because they see themselves in them.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they got a lot of the same genes, so they could kind of relate to that person. I'm a highly sensitive person, and so is my son. I'm very anxious, and so is my son. So I tend to be more patient with some of that stuff than his dad does, because I can, like, God, it's just like, oh man, he totally got that from me. So I think sometimes you empathize more with maybe one of your, you know, children. But I don't know if it's truly your favorite.
Or got not. It.
You don't have to, you know, because we don't, it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter if you might sense that, like, oh, like, she's totally mom's favorite. But what does it really mean? Like, does it mean that your mom doesn't love you? No.
Got it. Casey, thank you very much. This was really great.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.